We've gotten a good look at the book of Proverbs, understanding that most of it is built in antithetic parallelism, that the little couplets, two lines, generally say this but not this, or don't do this in order that you may do this, the opposites that form a singular idea and a direction in which one ought to progress. We looked at the overall structure of the book of Proverbs, noting that it has a very clearly defined outline, that the prologue sets up the purpose of the Proverbs, but then there are the lectures on wisdom and folly, and we are like a young man who is entering society in a new neighborhood, and there are two dominant women that might attract our attention. One is folly, one is wisdom. If we go folly's direction, we lose ourselves. We lose everything that's important. We lose our place in the world. If, however, we go with wisdom, we gain ourselves, we gain a relationship with God, the Creator, and the wisdom and the ways of creation are coming home to us. If we follow wisdom, then the Proverbs in their collections make a lot of sense. They teach us the ways we should go and the people that we should be. And those collections are these, the Proverbs of Solomon, the Sayings of the Wise, along with more Sayings of the Wise, then the second Proverbs of Solomon collected by Hezekiah's men about 200 years after Solomon's death, and then those cryptic statements, the Sayings of Agur and the Sayings of King Lemuel, short collections that have a very different feel, but also participate in the general sense of what wisdom is about. But today we're going to take a look at the epilogue, the concluding poem. It's often identified as the wife of noble character, and it has been used on many occasions as the dominant theme for study on things like Mother's Day. Doesn't this sound like the woman who gave birth to you and guided your life? Isn't this the woman you want to marry? Well, yes, maybe so, and I certainly don't want to detract from its value for praising what the women in our lives have done for us, whether we're female or male. But there's something more going on, and when we look at it as the concluding episode in the book of Proverbs, it has a unique function, one that we ought not to ignore. First of all, it's important to notice that this collection, the last part of Proverbs 31 in our numbering of it, is actually a unique unit on its own. It is an acrostic poem. Now, we've run into acrostic poems before in the collection of the Psalms. Here one happens again. An acrostic poem is one in which the first letter of each successive couplet or section begins with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. That's why there are 22 verses in this section, or 22 units in this section, because there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And while we can't know this in our English or other language translations of the book of the Proverbs, if we were to read it in Hebrew, we would find that the beginning letters of the successive couplets follow the sequence of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. It's sort of the idea that reminds us of knowing everything from A to Z, from beginning to end. Or in the New Testament, we'll have that expression of Jesus, he's the Alpha and the Omega. In the Greek language, it's Alpha as the first letter of the Greek alphabet and Omega as the last letter. So everything from beginning to end, or in English, from A to Z. In other words, the poem is designed to be a kind of comprehensive statement or overview of the qualities of the topic of the poem itself. And what's the topic of the poem? The perfect wife, the perfect woman. Who is this ideal woman? Who is this perfect wife? Is this what the Bible intends to say about the exact duties and responsibilities of women generally, of wives in particular, that if one takes on the responsibilities of being a wife, this is what one ought to be doing? Well, there are all sorts of studies you'll find along those lines, but I think that it's not intended in that way, because it's intended to be a kind of symbolism of something larger. If you think back to the opening lectures, there the idea is that we are all this young man. We are all masculine, whether we're female or male. We are all masculine, my son, now encountering two personified forms in society. There's the female folly, there's the female wisdom. Who will you as a male be attracted to? All of us are attracted to wisdom and folly. Which one attracts us more? Who will we go with? If we go with wisdom, we marry wisdom. Wisdom becomes our wife, whether we're female or male. And the rest of the book of Proverbs is essentially the furnishings in the marriage house between us and wisdom. As we marry wisdom, this is how the house of wisdom functions. This is life in tandem with wisdom. This is what things look like and our experiences and how we see through the windows of the house of wisdom. If we've chosen wisdom, we've lived in wisdom's house, and now the concluding acrostic poem is not about any woman in general in society. It's not about a rigorous checklist for what the good wife should be. It's not the qualities of social behavior that are intended and prescripted by the Bible for every woman, but instead, this is how wisdom has treated us and how wisdom functions as our wife in the marriage relationship that matters most. So the concluding poem summarizes the good life created by wisdom. And that, I think, is a different way of taking a look at this acrostic poem, which is larger and more significant and ties into not just how should we treat our mothers on Mother's Day, or what should we be looking for as males in female partners, or as females, what should we set up as our goals for life, but rather how should we as females and males generally in society, in our understanding of life as given shape by a creator, find our way into the depths of relationships that truly matter. Now, there's a note that should go along with this. In this personification of wisdom, particularly in Proverbs chapter 8, remember this is one of the lectures on wisdom at the beginning of the book of Proverbs, there's a section that makes wisdom personal and like a creative partner for Yahweh. Since in the Gospel of John, in the beginning of that Gospel, some of the same concepts seem to be used in a similar way to describe Jesus as the Word of God, present in creation, active in creation, and now personified in the incarnation of the Christ as Jesus on earth, some theologians have tried to interpret or conflate these two ideas, the idea of the wisdom in Proverbs 8 and the pre-incarnate manifestation of the Son of God who becomes Jesus. Well, I think both of these need to stand on their own, and while you can find many helpful studies about those things, it's probably not going to enhance your understanding of either the Gospel of John or the person of Jesus, or what this particular passage in the book of Proverbs is all about. It's highly speculative, and it doesn't add much to either our thoughts about wisdom as the guiding force of our relationship with God or our understanding of who Jesus is. And probably we should not go in that direction, but it has been done often, and so I bring it to your attention. While much of the book of Proverbs exists as these very brief, usually two-line antithetical parallelism nuggets about living wisely, they only make sense after reading and understanding the lectures on wisdom and folly that open the book as a whole, chapters 1 through 9. If at the end of those lectures we, as the son that's being referred to, whether male or female, choose folly as our life companion, the rest of the book means nothing to us. But if we choose wisdom as our life companion, The rest of the book is essentially the atmosphere and furnishings in the house of wisdom, the things we see and do from day to day. That's why these proverbs are life statements. How do you act day by day by day? In other words, the proverbs themselves are the lifestyle of those who have committed to a lifetime relationship with God as manifested in the personification of wisdom. So the connections between the Proverbs and the wisdom literature of other nations may well show the success of God's activity through Israel, by which the wisdom of Solomon became recognized throughout the ancient Near East as symbolic of the life of Israel with its God. And so we participate in wisdom, and in so doing, live lives that become living witnesses of our relationship with God. In that sense, Proverbs is extremely missional. Much to think about the book of Proverbs.